Okay, the Mishnah says Hasecher Sapayalim V'omer lehem lahashkim alaharif Mokim shenogu shalai lahashkim shalai lahariv Einar ashoi lakaifim. So now this parak is very interesting because especially on this first Mishnah is seems to be a lot more agadata than halacha discussions in the Gemara. But I think that even the agadata has a place in the context of the halacha. At some point we should get a little bit of an understanding of that. So the Mishnah begins with Hasecher Sapayalim, a person who hires workers. It's in contrast to the last parak about a person who hires craftsmen, and these are presumably unskilled workers, people who carry things and break things, put things together in a not too complex fashion. So they're basically employees. You have in Yerushalayim, you have it, of course, to other cities. You come to a certain corner, guys are waiting to be picked up. So he hired them, didn't speak out anything. And then later he says, well, of course, you realize we don't work 9 to 5 here, we work 8 to 6. So we say, no, if the meaning of the place is that we work 9 to 5, so he doesn't have the power. Anyway, show you the chayfa. Along comes Rashi, and he changes the language to Eino Yochel L'Kaifa. And this change from Rashi survives into the Rambam and the Torah. So it becomes like a standard. So the way we have the Mishnah says Eino Rashi. Eino Rashi means he's not permitted. Eino Yochel means he doesn't have the power to do it. So we need to understand that presumably, let's say Rashi had a different gift. Well, even if he had a different gift, it'd be interesting to know why. But if he's changing it, if he's modifying it for the purposes of Pirush, then we certainly want to understand why he's presenting it as Eino Yochel. He can't. Now, I would assume that there's a substantive halachic difference between Eino Rashi and Eino Yochel. Because if you say Eino Rashi, then presumably, if the next day the guy went home, or the same day he went home, you know, his wife, Akarach's wife, gave him a whole speech. How do you let him take advantage of you, you know? So the next day he comes back with his lawyer, and he says, I'm taking it into the inventory. He worked me an extra 2 hours, because everyone else is working 9 to 5, and you said 8 to 6, and it wasn't in the original deal. So if any rush, then presumably the guy owes him for 2 hours. And that's the scenario, because he's not allowed. But any yachal just means he can't enforce it. But if he was a little intimidating and the guy didn't have high self-esteem, couldn't stand up for himself, so that's it. So presumably, this is a win. If he can get out of it in advance, if the employee can say hello, that's not the deal, then he wins. So the guy is Eino Yochel L'Kaifa. The guy can say, I insist. You don't have the power to insist. But if he pushed and the guy gave. So you don't say any rashi l'kaifin. So I think that's a clear nafkamina, and the halacha is actually shifting between the simple reading of the Mishnah and Rashi's modification. So you need to understand where he gets that from. Then Rashi says any yachal l'kaifin, the Gemara parach pshita. Gemara is going to ask that this is obvious, and the truth is, it seems to me that The kasha of pshita over here is really a little more powerful than usually is, because in general, if in the fourth mishnah of a parak, the third halacha, it says something that's pshita, and the Gemara says this is simple, so the Gemara says, well, there's a scenario, there's a case where it applies in some unique way. All right, but over here, this is the first halacha of the first mishnah on a new subject. So you're introducing a new subject, you're coming in. Swinging, you know, you're going to really let us have this power of the halacha. And the first thing you tell me is pshita. So it's very odd. So I think that when Rashi says Gemara parah pshita, it's a little more to it than usual, because it's a little extra kasha there than just why do I need this case? It's like, this is what you're leading with, but what are you doing? Now, the Rambam makes it even more interesting, because the Rambam only paskins the language of the Mishnah, and he doesn't give you the Gemara's Teret of the Pshita. So that's interesting in its own right. He feels the language is more important to preserve. And then when the Gemara says, where do you need it for? And he gives a particular case, Rambam doesn't even bring that case. Okay, so the Gemara says, so let's see the Gemara. The Gemara has Pshita. So it says, like, Tzricha, the Tafelua Agrayo. The case is where he gave them more than the going rate. So everybody gets $6 an hour. He comes around and says, I'm looking for employees at $8 an hour. So they all jump. And then, Ma'al de Tema Omelu, Ha de Tafelucho Agrayo, Adatu de Mekad Misu Machashchisu Ba'adoi. That he can then say, listen, why do you think I was paying extra? Because I have a longer work day. Come ask for lunch, so the Mishnah's coming to tell you, Domrele, they tell him, I did toughest lunch. You know why you paid extra? I died to Davdin Allah, I did the Shapir. You paid extra, so we should perform better. Because there's a whole theory of economics that says that if you pay more, the people work better. So, and so they say, that's why you paid extra. Okay, very nice. So the kasha is like this. That why did the Gemara have to give you a rebuttal on that side? If the din of the Mishnah is that you follow the minhag, so I would say it's enough to say that he offered more money. They showed up to work. When he showed up to work, he says, let's work your extra hours. And they say no. So he says, yeah, but I offered more money this year. What's that have to do with me? I call committing on dinner. Okay, here we don't work more than these hours. But why are they responsible to his offering more money? How does that put them at a disadvantage where they have to give a rebuttal at all? The Gemara says the only reason why it works is because they have a teretz that there is a swara why we understood you to give more money, and so that. But other than that, he would win. So the question is, what's this idea? What's this power that he has where they need a rebuttal? For example, later, there's another halacha where the Gemara says that if the minig is to give them food, so, and he comes along and says, you can have food, but you can't have a food break. So you have to eat the food outside working hours, so you say, lav kol kamino. You can't do that. And that's it. They don't have to give a whole speech in return. You just say, you can't do it. This kol kamino amdino. So it should be the same way over here. If it's based on minig, makom shenagu, and the power of minig is that unless you speak out concrete terms in opposition to the minhag, then the minhag is what carries. So then he says, I thought you, you know, I gave extra money. Very nice. You're not a good negotiator, you know. What does that have to do with us? I mean, we have to work for the minhag. So how do you understand? So basically we're asking three questions. We're asking, what's this first halacha? This is the opening halacha, I think, that is pshita, or maybe they found a case. All right, there's a case where it's an akamina. So that's your first halacha, in a funny case where you do that. It seems an odd way to lead a parak, a major new issue. That's the first question. And the second question is that why is it necessary for the Gemara to kamashim on the armulay? They have to have an answer. And then the third, which I really asked first, is why the Rashi shifts from Ein Rashi LeKaifon to Ein Yochel LeKaifon. So I think if you put all this together, it gives you an idea that what's happening here is like this. We're saying, this is, on the contrary, we're leading with this right off because this gives us a tremendous insight into the whole relationship between the employer and the employee. And we start the parak with Hasecher Sapayim. I know the Marshal calls the prayer kapayim, but we start Hasecher Sapayim. You have one of those little Rashi's where he preserves those three words and they're its own little Diva Maskel, you know, Hasecher Sapayim. Because what this parak is about is, well, at least in the beginning, is the power of the employer. So we're saying he's the Secher. He's the one who's bringing benefit here. He's hiring people. They're standing on the corner. They have nothing. He came and he's created this whole relationship. He gave a guy a job. So therefore, the presumption is in his favor. So that's why we start off by saying that, you know, he almost can force them. He can practically force them to go. But the only thing is, Minhag HaMedina wins against him. But so where do you have an actual nafka mina where his powers, you see his power straining? The Minhag HaMedina is barely restraining his power. So the case is, you have a case where he gave them some extra money. That's ready enough to say, oh, he did something a little unusual. she should win. He's in power. And in fact, he would win if they don't have a tshuva. Or theoretically, and maybe, you know, if it'd be a kind of a job that nobody could do better than anybody else. I don't know if there is a kind of job like that, but if there's a certain kind of job where just sticking square pegs in square holes, and there's no such thing as a vidat shapirta, so then they would lose. So what do you mean? There's no such thing as a vidat shapirta, right? So I win because I gave extra money. So, but the point is that the Mishnah is leading with this to show you that in determining the nature of the contract, the presumption is in his favor. Why? Because he's the guy. He's the one. He's the Asarikar Sabon, and he's the one who's creating this whole relationship. He's initiating it. Now, I mean, interestingly, when you get to the beginning of the next parak, there's even a clue that maybe, in a certain sense, the Torah is actually looking at it like he's renting the person. Because the words of Asarikar Sabon sound like you actually rent the person. When you get to the beginning of Hashoyal and you see that Baal Avimai, the Mishnah's using language is where he rented the person and the animal. So then it's almost, I don't think that you could mamish, you know, you can't rent a person in the same way you can rent an animal, but it's related enough that the Gemara seems to present the Ptur of Baal Avimai as based on that idea. So it's the same transaction, a similar transaction. It's happening with the owner as it's happening with the animal. So, but that's, you know, the extreme of it. But the basic idea of Sefer Sephardim is, hey, I'm hiring people. Okay. Hiring people, wow, you're the man, you're the employer. The whole society is only running because of you. Otherwise, we're all sitting on our hands. We don't know where to go to work. But you came, and you're the entrepreneur. You decided you're going, you know, you're Bill Gates, you know, you're opening new vistas of technology, you're hiring people. Fantastic. So the presumption is in his favor because he's the initiator of this entire contract. He creates the schiras, and whatever role the individual has, he only got through him. That's the first aftermath. Now, the second aftermath, of course, is going to go in the exact opposite direction. But the initial setup of the Mishnah is that in the basic contract, in determining the salary and what the extent of their obligations is, the presumption is all on his side. He's the boss. And then you have a little piece of Gemara, Amrei Shlokish. And now this Gemara, so that first Gemara, by the way, disappeared in the Rambam. We'll keep that in the back of our mind. I hope we'll get back to it later. So the Rambam, this whole Gemara disappeared. He just brought the exact phrase of the Mishnah, except with any Yachal like Rashi. And he did not give the Nafkamina in the case where he gave them extra money. He didn't do that. So it's interesting. So he just brings that initial halach. And then this next piece of Gemara also disappears in the Ramah. Gemara says like this, Amrei Shlokish. You'll see a little aleph up there, but that only sends you to the Torah. And the Beis Yosef gives two terutzim and is trying to answer why the Ramah skips it. But the Gemara says, Poyah b'knisos mishalai b'tziyos mishalva'al b'ayis. So you bring a pasuk to establish a kind of a work schedule. There's a Torah work schedule. So the Gemara says, "V'lasu hechi nehigi." The Gemara says, "Why are you giving me a work schedule for? Let's just go out and see what the standard work schedule is out in the private sector. What are you bringing me pesukim?" So Rashi says, "V'lasu hechi nehigi be'ir." So even though every city has its own minhag. It's very interesting that despite the fact that Menhagim vary from place to place, but still the understanding was that the minig is going to carry. What's the Rish Lakish talking about? So when it says two truths. Now, by the way, even that cast is a little bit odd because what if there's no minig? Before the terrorists, that the guys, that it's a new town with new people, but even if it's not a new town, but why can't you have a town without a minig? Each guy who hires somebody works something out with his guy, so it doesn't have. Why is there a presumption that there must be a minute? Well, the Mishnah said, "Call the minute." I understand if there's a minute, you follow the minute. But to attack Rish Lakish and say Rish Lakish is mighty, what are you talking about? Just check out the minute. But do what? There can't be a town without a minute. All right. Why is there such a strong presumption that there must be a minute? It seems to me you could run a an effective town without a mink. Each boss meets each employee and they work something out. And in fact, I would have to say that in a lot of areas of employment today, probably there is no mink. You know, a thing like 9-to-5, maybe in America you could say, even that's probably only office jobs, stores are more. I mean, you know, Israel, the guy said, well, what about 1-to-4 nap, you know? Is that the mink? All right, but a lot of things, I think, you show up, you don't know. So with that poisik, we'll see later. You speak it out. You can speak out anything. But I'm just saying, there's probably some stage in which everybody speaks something out, so there's no minhag anymore. Everyone's speaking. There's no fallback. And it doesn't say the government should establish a minhag, right? It doesn't. Maybe it's implied, but it doesn't verbalize that it's part of the role of government to establish, basic requirements or standards for employment. It doesn't really say that. So there's like a minhag of the year of the people. And we see in later minhag, kutari come from different ways. So why is there this assumption in the Kashan, this premise that there must be a minhag, a whole Rish Lakish that throw him out. The Rish Lakish Mahi, what's he talking about? Check out the minhag. So that's one thing I think we should be concerned about. Then, so then now the Gemara answers, he's talking about Nekutoi. What's Nekutoi? So Rashi says, she nishlaktu b'mkayim esarbe. You have a new community. In Israel, this has happened a number of times in recent years, and Kiryat Sefer, Beitar, Mayaka, places like that. Nobody was living there. Then you come. Unless you say they're part of Yerushalayim, a place like Beitar. Basically, nobody was there. It was sitting empty. They went up there and started populating this mountain. And they brought in people from all kinds of communities. So it's in the Kutot. They brought from all over a collection. So Rashi says, V'yesh Mokim Shemagdimin. V'yesh Mokim Shemachashchin. There are certain places where they go to work early, certain places that late. So in that case, you can only fall back on the derasa. This Rashi needs a lot of work because it's not really clear whether he really means that you're obligated when you make a new city to follow the derasa. But it certainly could be read that way, which is it doesn't matter all these minhagim, but when a new place happens, guys come with different minhagim, so now you have a mess. So the only way to solve it is to make the deraisa. Right? That's a little bit like what it sounds like. If you have to choose, you'd probably have to say it sounds like that, which is an interesting chiddush in a way, because you can set up a mishnah in the middle of whatever time period you're talking and say a kal kamenig amdina, and then every place has minhagim already, and then from now forward you're going to say nekutoi. But how did all these minhagim develop? Theoretically, at some point, these people gathered. For the most part, there's a few, nice Yeshua Benun places, but for the most part, over time, you're getting new places, and you're setting up minhagim. So is Rish Lakish hold that it's really wrong to set up when you have a new community? Is it wrong to set up, to get together, make a big meeting, vote, or just let it evolve, have a co-committing amdina, just whatever. If the couple of weeks go by, you say, it seems to be a culture that we're doing this, so I'm going to stick with it. I don't know. So either he's saying you have to, or he's saying it's a solution. You come to a place, and some guys are saying this way, some guys are saying that way. But really, as part of a way of clarifying this, Rashi, you could ask a different question. You could ask, why should Rashi say, Yesh Markim Shemagdim and Yesh Markim Shemachashim? What about if it happens to be they all come from places with the same minhag? It's a coincidence. But they all come to New York after the Holocaust, and the Bobovers and the Belzers and the Munkaches and the Gera and the Sminka and the Belzer. Anyway, they all come from all different places. And it just turns out in every one of those places they were Magdima. And not Bechashim, right? But still there's no minhag. You got 1,000 guys who coincidentally happened to have that minhag in 1,000 different places. But does that add up to make a minhag? Just because they had the same minhag, they're not. It's not the same place. It just works out. By coincidence, they all happen to have the same minhag. They all come from a place with the same minhag. But a new place has to create its own minhag. So you could still say that that's enough to be nekutoi. If I didn't have this Rashi, I could tell you that nekutoi means any time people come from other places. So it doesn't matter where. And even the Rashi, by the way, says v'yesh makim she magdim v'yesh makim she mechashim. He doesn't necessarily say that it's guys who came from the Kermes. you could debate on reading the Rashi too. That maybe Rashi is good for saying that. He's saying not that these guys necessarily came from different places, but different Minhagim. But because they came from different places and Minhagim are different, so we have to start from scratch. It's possible to read the Rashi that way as well. But if you read it the first way, that he means that some guys came from this type of place, some guys came from that type of place, and this is a solution to that problem. So then it sounds like, again, that there's a presumption in favor of keeping a minhag, so that even if we had to be mitzar of 1,000 different guys who happen to all be magdima, say, you know what, everyone's magdima, well, there's no fight, let's do it. So if that's the correct reading of the Rashi, I think it may be not that way. So then it's interesting, you know, just like in the Gemara, the Kasha also said, assume there has to be a minhag. What's the minhag? I don't understand. What's Rish Lakish talking about? What's the minhag? So then also in the Teretz, there's also a little bit of a presumption, it seems like, where, hey, if everyone came to with the same minhag from different places, so then it would automatically, you know, say, why? Well, there's no conflict. Let's just make a composite minhag of all the individual minhag. But they see it, they happen to come from different places, so it doesn't really add up. So then you do this. And again, are you forced to do this or you can't do this? So and then the Gemara says Ikad Amri the Grisulu Kipal the Rice, that Ibai Seimer, that there's another possibility, that it's if the guy employs and says, listen, I'm not so smart, I don't know what's fair, what's not fair, I don't know what's in the culture, what's not in the culture, all I know is I like to do what says in the Torah. So then this would be the fallback. These are the two truths in the Gemara. And again, the Rama erases this whole piece of the Gemara. It's a little bit interesting to know why does he do that. So I think, you know, hopefully at the end we'll develop a theory on that. But the Gabi the Rashi, I think that we see within the Rashi, I'm going to try to say a little more than this in the Rama, but I think this is Rashi takes you part of the way there, which is that the way the Mishnah set up is that the Mishnah wants you to know that there's a presumption in favor of making Minhagim and not in favor of falling back on the Torah. But let's say there's a Tosfos in quite a few places around Shas who says that he asks, why are you by Arba Shomrim? So there's a standard in the Chumash of you know, we all know from learning on Afkid Shem, Achirim Shem, and so on. But the truth is that Mishnah, the Mishnah of Arba Shomrim got stuck at the end of Haseichas HaPayalam. It's a little questionable why it's there. It could be this is part of it. It's a remnant to this thing. Because Tosfos in quite a few places, Tosfos asks the Kasha and says this principle that Tosfos asks, how come it seems that you can make your own terms? The Gemara said you're allowed to make your own terms. Why are you allowed to? The Torah said, so, isn't it Masna Masha Kosa the Torah? Aren't you going against the Torah system? Tosfos says, no, the Torah system is just a suggestion. How he knows it, you know, how you learn in the Pesukim, I don't know exactly, but that's the principle. He says that, no, that really the Torah is happy that people should make arrangements between themselves, and you want both parties to be satisfied with the deal. Nothing wrong with negotiating terms, but in case you're deadlocked or whatever it is, the Torah gives you a fallback system. And so in the same way over here, it would seem to be that this thing Rish Lakish is saying is it's a fallback, but it's something that we're not eager to go there, and I think that's part of what Rav Marcy said. There must be a minhag. What do you mean there's no minhag? How could there not be a minhag? Because there's a presumption in favor of a minhag, and so yeah, if he's sincere, said that Grishu Kapal Darasa, so all right, let's start doing this. But the Torah is not anxious to impose a standard in this relationship. So that's an interesting insight. There's not that many, a lot of things in the Torah, including in Dini Mamonos, but the Torah is very gung-ho, so to speak, in imposing its will. But over here, the Chazal are hearing that the Torah says, even in Rish Lakish, which the Rambam's not even going to pass in that much, I'm saying, but even in Rish Lakish, that what Rish Lakish is saying is, look, if And the Gemara in the Kasha says, how could there be no minhag? All right, there's a strange case where there's no minhag. And then we ask in Rashi, what if all the guys have the same thing? So why? How does that add up to a minhag? Because there's a presumption in favor of a minhag. That's what I'm saying. That's what you're getting from the Gemara. So it starts off like this. So now the Mishnah is really, so far, is two steps. Step number one in the Mishnah is that the Seichah has tremendous power because he's generating this whole relationship. So he starts off in a tremendous position of power, and all doubts really are presumptively in his favor. Okay. But then we say, however, there's a very strong opposing force of many Gavadim, which we are happy to promote. Hazal are happy to promote this. We want to see Minig HaMedina, because Minig HaMedina is a sort of a check and balance against some of the power that the employer has. It's fine. We're happy. We're happy that they should make collective bargaining agreement in this society, that we should come to a place where people are comfortable. Okay. Then you get to the third piece of the mission. And over here, now, something in the opposite direction happens, where all of a sudden now, the employee got all the power. So let's see what the Mishnah says. So Makav Shenogu Lozin Yozin L'Sapik Mim Siki Yisapik Akot Minig HaMedina. As far as feeding the people go, so you follow the Minig. Ma'aseh Reb Yechon Ma'aseh Yishamel Abnoi Tzei Shchor Lano Poyal Holoch Uposk Lam Bezoinis. So his father sent him out to get workers, and he said to him, come, we'll give you a meal. Why? You can't feed these guys according to the standard they're entitled to, because they're B'nai Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. Ella, actually, Yisrael Mimloch, Tzev, Merlin, Amanash, Enoch, Malay, Al Pastor Kittis, go quickly before they start, and tell them that, listen, I just want to clarify the terms, that all you get is bread and some kind of beans. Shimigamli says he didn't have to say that. He didn't have to spell that. So what happened over here? And we started off saying pretty much. And then all of a sudden we seem to go away from it. So the Gemara asks later on, Maisa Lister, that this story seems to be contradicting what said before. This Gemara is a paper of Manal under the last line. So the Gemara says Suri Mashiv Hafiktani, there's a line missing. But the Mishnah should say it in Pasuk Lam Mizayin is Riva Lam. If you mentioned explicitly at the time of hiring that we provide a meal, that implied more than the Rats is Riva Lam Yotze Alaminik. Why? The Kim Dolet Sarah Chlasnu Ye Vasni. Since it wasn't necessary to spell out that you provide food, because it's implied. So when you turned it from an implicit arrangement to an explicit arrangement, so you created a tanai, Rashi calls it. And the FM test, he also calls it a tanai. Asni. So then, Mizoini Yisari Karma. Then you said extra. Okay, so let's say, so I don't understand. In the beginning of the Mishnah, when the guy gave an extra dollar, so what did we say? That made it look like he gets more work in return. Right? So, he's giving an extra dollar. He's demanding more hours. So barely we squeak out of having to give him more hours because he gave us an extra dollar. Then the guy says an extra, a little extra word about eating. Whoa! Now we're ready to get the high priced, deluxe food like Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. You know, you got to kill three workers. You have to kill three cows to give each one a tongue, right? How did that happen? On the contrary, a minute ago we said the opposite. We said that you pay more, implies you should be getting more. You said the opposite. Oh, you said you pay more. I don't know. That opens the door. You go, if he doesn't run quickly and tell him bread and beans, he's going to have to give him an unlimited amount. Even Shlomo Melech meal is not going to be enough for these guys. So how did that happen, right? So you see a fascinating thing, that Mizayna is not part of Tzchar. Zionist is not part of Schar. Schar is one thing, and Zionist is another. So in Schar, all this great power that's vested in the employer is in the area of avoiding Malach and Schar, because I'm giving you Schar, so I entitled a lot of Malach. But this thing that we feed a guy, now, if there's no many, there's no many, but Makar Shinagu Laz and Yazan, that's not part of Schar. That's Mizionist. That's a yid, he gets to eat. And he is entitled to eat, so that's an employee right, rather than an employer concession. It's an employee right, and because it's an employee right, now you measure from, you don't measure anymore with the power of this guy to seicher to sport. Now you look at a yid, he is entitled to eat. Oh, if you let the yid eat as much as he's entitled to, then he's a free citizen of Ben Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. He comes with all these tremendous power to the table about what he's entitled to eat. What ends up happening is, he tells him, you better go quickly and make sure that the original contract shrinks the rights to possible kittens. So it comes out, the structure of the Mishnah now is really very beautiful because it starts out by showing you, first of all, the tremendous power of the employer. He's generating this whole contract. Without him, the guy's got nothing. Right? So that's where we start from. But the minhag modifies his power. Then we say that opens us to the whole idea of minhag, that the Torah is satisfied with the idea that minhag should play a role of taking a guy down, because really his power is like dictatorial, the employer. So the minhag takes him down a little bit. Then we say, by the way, when it comes to food, the employee now has all the rights here. So even though, and there's absolutely no proportion between the amount of work he's doing or the value of the work. What do you mean, Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov Shlomo V'Shaltei? How about the fact that the whole job is worth $40 for the day? Feed him like Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov is going to cost you like $300 for lunch. So why isn't there an applied proportionality? No, because that's, the Torah set it up that he's got one set of sweetest. The employer, he's the guy with the svar. He's dangling the svar. Whoa, he's got power. The other guy, when it comes to eat, I'm a yid, I have to eat. I have to eat like a yid. So then he has all the power. And then the minhag is modifying on both sides. So that this clearly gives you an insight into the system where the Torah is happy that at the end of the day, neither one should really get to exercise his full rights. Because if the employee exercises his full rights, you can have a society where everyone's downtrodden. And if the employee exercises his full rights, it's going to be impossible. So you're going to have these union contracts that, shut the business down in a year or two. So what's the solution? The solution is that the Minhag HaMedina, that the society should work together to figure out where the medium is. Now, it's always interesting that in the first case of the Mishnah by the boss, it said, Mokim Shenogu Shalei L'Hashkim. So by the boss, it said Makar Shinogu. It didn't say Medina Shinogu. And then, but then later, when it started talking about food, it said Akar Kaminika Medina. And then again, in the Sefer Kaminika Medina. So it's very interesting. I think this is one of the remnants from Chazal. That Chazal, the little danger is rioting and getting out of control, then the employers turn into robber barons and destroying the society. So in other words, the employers need some restraint, there's no question, so they shouldn't take advantage. So, but that restraint is called Minhag HaMakom. Makom Shenogu. Minhag HaMakom. They said that this society should function. So usually the employers have a little seichel to self-regulate, to realize that you can't drive people into the dirt because you're not going to have like we said before, it's in the interest of the employer to see that the employee should be happy to a certain extent. And since the employer is very much a chacham of self-interest, that's why he's an entrepreneur. He calculates how he's pretty good at calculating how things are going to come out best at the end of the day. So that self-regulating process in the society is called Markov Shinogu. But the workers of the world unite. The employees can turn to a rioting force because usually they're a little less educated and a little less calculated, understanding, the ratios between costs and returns and things like that. It's not their field. All I know is I come, I need to get my money. So that's called Minhag HaMedina, which Medina has the word in it. It's more, it implies more where society has to, not just society, it's like, it's more governmental and more focused on the rule of law. I'm just saying, I was just a remez, the laws of Chazal and the Mishnah. I think that, so, but you see, and especially within Jews, by the way, I mean, in the American Constitution, they talk about this idea that the rights are really not from the government, they're from Hashem. And you see over here also, the way it's set up is very interesting. It's on the one hand, the masker, the Zayfus HaPoylem, he's putting up the money. So, you know, he's a Baal HaMeir, so that's the source of his power. And then the other guy is B'nai Aram Yitzchak V'Yaakov. You know, I'm a Yid, so I'm entitled. So it's interesting that there's a certain basic rights that the... Now, I assume there's also some right of Ben Adam that's outside of Klal Yisrael, but within Klal Yisrael for sure, Ben Aram Yitzchak V'Yaakov is, you know, that's a tremendous basic right that guarantees you that beyond a certain point, he can't push him. So, now I'm going to try to get back to the thing with the Rambam maybe before I run out of time, but I want to diverge a little bit into the Agadah. I think that what the Chazal did here with the Agadah is very fascinating. You'll notice that there's really two streams of Agadah. Now the second one was a little more of a setup, because the Mishnah mentioned that Shleiman and mentioned that Rami Yitzchak V'Yaakov. So it's kind of a setup to start talking about Shleiman, talking about Rami Yitzchak V'Yaakov. So that's a little more, it was ripe for Agadah. But in the first one, it's very odd, because right after they said that first halacha, where he paid a little extra, and then the halacha of Resh Lakish and Mekutoi, all of a sudden, Rav Zeira is dashing that what it says, that, you know, there's darkness and there's light, and so he says that, you know, tzaddikim, they're going to eventually have light in the next world, but Rishoyim, they're like animals, and they messing up Olam Hazeh, and then all of a sudden we have this whole discussion about it. Now, so I think the bottom line, what they're trying to do here, is that since we show that the Mishnah is really set up between two poles, one pole is the tremendous power of the employer, and the other pole is the tremendous basic humanitarian rights of the employer, trying to balance these. So I think that the agathas are set up that way as well. That first they give you the agathas of the power of the employer. So now, by the way, the Rambam, then in the Hilchos Sfiros, has his own little agadah. In the last halacha, he says that really the employer has tremendous rights over the employee, but he should be a nice guy and be nevata. And the employee should also feel very obligated to put in his time. And he brings the Yaakov Avinu. He shows from both sides. But I think the Gemara is setting it up like this, saying that the first thing is Hashem made the world to be productive. So they go right away, and the first thing they bring this passing about the Rishayim, who are not productive, and they're really messing up the world, like Chayas. And then immediately they're telling you a story with Elazar of Shimon, or Rishmael of Yossi, that they basically developed a system of crime detection, where they, I mean, even though for some reason the Gemara tells you that they were both hefty, so they fit into that, you know, image of the armchair detective, but they didn't use any clues at the crime scene, you know, nothing like that. They just basically were scattered around, and anyone who looked like he was hanging around the neighborhood sleepy and during the day, they figured, ah, he's a crook, right? That was the whole approach to solving crimes. And when they pointed him out to the Romans, they strung him up. And then Rabbi Elazar Shimon had some regrets about it, whatever. Yo, told Rishmael Rabbi not to do it. There's some issues about maybe they pushed it too far. But the point is, the bottom line of it is that basically, just the Eibishter, the Rabbi Shalom puts us in the world and he wants results and he tells us what to do, and then he offers chayr at the end of the day. And that's a model for the employer-employee relationship in this world. So that the every time a guy goes out and he hires people to do a project, he's doing Michel Milo, because he's employing people, and we're going to be creative, we're going to accomplish things, and we're going to get people active and busy, and we're going to give them a start. It's exactly the way Hashem treats people. And that's really humanity expressed in its best way, is when you get up early in the morning, you sun up, you're out there working. If you're working all the daylight, okay, doc, you get a chance to, you know, sleep a little or whatever else you do to wind down. But the point is, this world, the light of the sun is shining, get out, make hay while the sun shines. And a guy who's not, he's come out Chayav Misa. He come out. I mean, he said he must be a crook. Okay, it's Chayav Misa because he's a crook. But the bottom line, again, so you know, he should have done it, he shouldn't have done it. But I think the point they're trying to make is that the koyach of the employer comes because he's playing this vital role of doing what Hashem wants, which is getting people to work. People should be out there working, and the employer is figuring out ways how to focus the human resources and make sure that they get salary. And that's a tremendous role in the society. That's really a hemshich of the Maisa Bereishis of Hashem, and come out to the point where someone who's not in this system is string them up. Come on. Okay. Then, and that's the end. That's this agalah. And all of a sudden, you come to the next agalah, and this goes the whole other way. Oh, Rav Yisrael, we're gonna have Rav Yisrael reactive, and Shloimeh, how much a Yid is entitled to, Badregas, it's unbelievable. You can't, even the language that the Pasuk said by Shlomo, it doesn't mean that's the meal, that's only the appetizer, So they play, they go completely the opposite way on the Indian Amazonas. So we have, and so it's dramatized in the Agada terms. The Yisoidus in the Halacha here, which is that on the one hand, there's this tremendous power of the employer and the obligation that the employer has to him, and on the other hand, when you look at Mezoinus, he has to eat. Not the Schar, but Mezoinus, he has to eat. So then, then a person's entitled to eat, Hashem takes care of people, and when the employer has to play that role, he has to play it in a big way, unless he makes some kind of a demand. I think that's a good havana in how the Mishnah works, and how the sugya works. So now, I take it to the end of the sugya, and I think that something happens here by the end, which I don't know if Rashi holds of it fully, but I think the Rambam probably holds of it more strongly. So after all the agalata, they get back to business, so to speak, in the Pezayim and Alf near the Mishnah, and you have a very odd piece of Gemara. It goes like this. Ela ad shelo yaschilu b'mlocha, say ve'amor lahem, al menash she'en lechem alai, al pas v'kitnes v'chulu. So here, how many words did they quote from the Mishnah? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 words in the Mishnah, and v'chulu. How many words did they take out from v'chulu? One word. They bring the entire phrase, and the only word they took out is bovad. Right? That's the one word that's missing there. Chulu, what did they take out? Bavad. So they have 16 words in. And to save the space, Amavad, they put in Bechulu, which takes up three spaces also. Two letters and an apostrophe. So what's going on? What are they doing? Right? Obviously, there's some kind of an akuda here, leaving out the word Bavad. What's going on? So the Gemara says like this. Amalei Rebacha Breid Derev Yosef Lerev Chista. Rebacha, the son of Rebbez Yosef Chista. Pas Kitnes Tam, but Pas Vik Kitnes Tam. What does it say in the Mishnah? Pas kitnis or bread, beans, or which could be interpreted as bread of beans, or bread and beans. Amalei said to him, Alekim, he gives a shvua. Tzricha vav ki mordai delivereth. He says, no, this really needs a vav badly. So Rashi said, like if you have a boat that's getting too close to the shore, so it could get grounded. Because it's time to be ground. So what you have, you need to have a stick, which Rashi brings a French word like a governor, a long stick. You get a little purchase off the ground and you push away to make sure you don't get stuck on the ground. So in other words, if you're not careful, if you leave out the vav, you're going to get marooned. You're going to get shipwrecked because you think the guy's telling you pass. The kitness, but he only said pas kitness. So then, when you come to collect, he's going to give you bread made out of beans, and you're going to be stuck. But it's a very funny image that he created this image. Where you better watch out, or you're going to end up shipwrecked, right? You're going to end up marooned on shore. So what's the idea of this image? Also, interestingly, he didn't answer the question of Tanan, because he said in pas kitness Tanan, or pas vikitness Tanan, which is in the Mishnah. So he says to him, oh no, it needs a vav. But he didn't answer, he didn't say first, pas v'kitnes tanan, and then say his explanation. But he Instead, he says, oh, it must have a vav, but he didn't say the Mishnah. Now, he said Tricha, which is a Lashon HaKeil, but he did not say Tanan. He didn't say the Mishnah. So that's an interesting question. What's going on over there? Now, and of course, the Rambam doesn't bring the Zina. Then it says, now, that's actually not the text that we have in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, it says, Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Loi Hayetzarach Loima. Rav Shimon Gamliel said, Loi Hayetzarach Loima, it wasn't necessary for him to say it. Hakol Kaminig Amdina. The Gemara changes it and quotes, Kilu quotes the Mishnah, but it changes it. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Einetzarach, Hakol Kaminig Amdina. And on that, the Gemara says, Hakol Asuyimai, Asuyahad the Tanan, Hasechers Aper, Vamalek Echad, Hishnaim Ibn Eir, Noisalek Apachas, Shibiskir, Divrev Yeshua, Vachacham Amir Mishamna Ben Eir. Is to teach you what it how the Tanah. Now there's no Mishnah like this, so of course on the side they tell you Tzarech Loima D'Tanya. The fact is that we have it as the Tanah. Of course, although this happens quite a few places in Shas, but it's the Rashi and Chulin that sets it up as a rule that every time he says the Tanah on a Brisa, so you have to explain it somehow that this Brisa is in some way explaining a Mishnah or something like that. It's a Rash Mechun, I think, in the left Tesvah. So at first, that's another interesting thing we're noticing, that it says Jitna. And then what does it say in this extra case, which we're getting out of Rav Shimon Gamliel? That Rav Shimon Gamliel added the phrase, Hakol Kaminig Amdina, why? To teach you that if a guy came and said, that, listen, I'll hire you and I'll pay you what people are getting in the city. So Rav Shua says, you pay him the least. But the Chacham says, no, you don't. Mishamnim b'neim. You do an average. And that's how, and that Kol Kaminig Amdina means the average. So Rashi says, Mishamnim b'neim, you do the average. What's the average? Loi b'pachas v'loi b'yosef. Not more or not less. El Kaminig Amdina b'neim. Rashi says, that's how he's explaining that Kol Kaminig Amdina. That the middle ground, the average employee, that's Minig Amdina. This is problematic, and the Rambam has a different shot that the grower points out here on the side. The Rambam says that what you do is you do the average from the highest paid to the lowest paid. So, in other words, if the people are being paid on a range from $4 to $8 an hour, so according to the Rambam, you pay $6. According to Rashi, it goes by the Beninus, and the implication would seem committing Hamadina. So it sounds like Rashi is doing some kind of combination of what in averages we call the median and the mode. Because the median is the middle number on a range, but the mode is the most common number on the range. So it sounds like Rashi has some combination thereof, where he's saying somewhere around the middle where there's the biggest cluster. So that's because he's getting Minig HaMedina and Beninus somehow to the same idea. So it's something in the middle range where there's enough there to call it Minig HaMedina. So it sounds like the way he's solving Minig HaMedina, because what do you mean Minig HaMedina? There's a range. It's clearly no 100% Minig HaMedina. Early in the Mishnah we had some in Hagen that were probably 100% Minig. But now it's going to be some percentage. So Rashi seems to understand that it means that there should be some cluster along that line and we're going to say that's the Beninus. It doesn't have to be necessarily right in the middle, but the Minig HaMedina we're calling it, where the largest group seems to be clustered. The Rambam says that you do halfway from the top to the bottom. So according to the Rambam, you have a thing that the Mishnah is calling Minig HaMedina, at which there might not be one guy in the entire town who gets this amount. Because maybe people will get $8 an hour and people will get $4. So we're paying him $6. Nobody gets $6. But we're paying him $6 because I call it the Minig HaMedina. So according to the Rambam, it's an unbelievable chiddush. But even Rashi, it's a chiddush that we're calling this a Minig HaMedina. We're expanding, this is not just a new halacha, this is expanding the definition of what Minig HaMedina means. So Rashi still understands, yeah, because a lot of people are doing this, so it's not everybody, but it's most, or the biggest group. Maybe it's only 40%, but there's 30% above, 30 below, and 40 in this cluster. So that's enough to create a Minig HaMedina. The Rambam's got a Minig HaMedina that nobody's getting. That the range is the Minig, and so the average becomes a way of responding to the Minig. A very difficult idea. So I'll tell you what I think is happening over here. and the Rambam more than Rashi, that they're learning that really the Gemara here at the end, it changed its mahalach. And by the way, this happens quite a few sugyas and shas, not that unusual, where the Gemara goes through a Mishnah and then starts learning it one way, and by the time it got it up to the next Mishnah, it went away, shifted, and it's learning a new mahalach. Now, most often there'll be a pretty direct kasha that locks it in, but sometimes they do it in subtle ways like this. So now, the Torah asks a question. The Torah, of course, he brings all these Gemaras. His language, he acts like a little puzzled. He's not getting the other sheet. It's interesting how he presents this. So when the Torah says, I don't really understand, because it seems to me obvious that we should be paskening like the Chachamim, with the whole story of... because it's set up as a major story in the Mishnah. And the Chasuri Masura is a stam, right? Then they bring this Maisa to support it. So you have the klal of, you know, like Chachamim, and there's Maisa Rav, which is also a Svaras Shipsa. Seems like a few Svaras to Paskin this way. And then he says, but I don't know why. I see the Rambam and others are Paskining like Rishim Ben Gamliel, right? There's a rule of Rishim Ben Gamliel winning against Yechidim, except for Eretz Yidin and Raya Achrein, whatever it is. But he doesn't see why it should apply. He brings it. He says, I see what they're doing. I don't know why they're doing it. So he passes the other one. So I think that the Rambam is, we can understand that he's seeing it here at the end of the Gemara. Why? Because he asked him, pas kitnis dan or pas vikitnis dan. Right? So he came back and he answered him, oh no, you must have a vote. But he didn't say it in the Mishnah. Because I'm saying that really the truth is, according to this Mandam in the Mishnah, you don't need the vote. Because since it's in Mizonis, the whole idea of this shita is that in Mizonis, the presumption shifts in favor of the employee, right? And in fact, that's why he says the word bilvad. What does the word bilvad mean? It means you got yourself in a deep hole because he deserves food like Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. So you have to shrink it down to pass for kitnis bilvad by getting him to be moichel down. Otherwise, it's not going to work. So it's Bavad, because it's on that line. He's entitled to Rami Yitzchak Yaakov, and you have to get him down. That's called Bavad. You're in the same system. But this man, that's why he took out the fools. He's that when he answers him, he doesn't answer him tonight. Because it's true. That particular man in the Mishnah, he would hold that way. But I'm not passing like him. I'm passing like Shimon Gamliel. So Halach Lamaisi says you do need a vote. Why? Because Shimon Gamliel doesn't have this whole idea. He holds that even when it comes, any negotiating that's done as part of the contract when he says I'm co-committing a Medina, he says no such thing. It's all minik. Everything's minik. So now I'm saying Rashi, I'll say it part way, and the Rambam I'll say a little further. And Rashi, I would say that he holds that what we learned in the Reisha still applies. That in any negotiated issue, the employer always wins. So therefore, if you don't get the guy to say vov, you're going to get shipwrecked. What do you mean shipwrecked? Because now you fell out of your the employee fell out of your area of power, and you're in his area of power. Because when it comes to setting terms, all issues will be settled in his favor. So if you didn't left out the vov, you're going to get stuck. He might not have even meant it at the time, but if his lawyer tips him off, you know, he could turn on you. And that's what he's saying. You know, be careful, don't get shipwrecked. But the Rambam, I think, will take it a step further. And especially because Gemara said, Lasuya Haditran, that this Brisa is actually going to change Pshat in the Mishnah. And that's why because I think even when the Gemara said, Shimon Gamliel, I'm in it, Sarah, it's a tip off. Because as a good general rule, we try to explain Machlokes in between Tanoim, where they're in the same Yesodis, but they're arguing on Protim. Only with rare exceptions where the Chazal determined that the Imam is arguing in the whole basic premise. So I think this is at least how the Rambam is learning it. And Rashi doesn't have to say quite this far. Rashi can just say what we said a minute ago, that there's a hint here that we're passing like a Rishon Ben Gamliel, because the Imam said, instead of explaining Tanan what he meant, he explains the Halacha. And then Rishon Ben Gamliel, so we're passing like him. But the Rambam, I think, takes it a step further, and that's why he erases all those other halachas, because the Rambam understands Rav Shimon Gamliel said, no, this, because, like we said earlier, that the Torah has this rut that the Torah doesn't want. That was, the Mishnah dramatized the two poles, but those two poles are so extreme and severe that really it makes the system unable to function unless the society gets together and creates a minimum. And so, because the power of the Seicha is just unbelievable. He's the Seicha, he's got all the power. On the other hand, there's also the power of the employee, but Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, he's entitled to the world. And so Mamela, at the end, when he comes and says, no, Ein Yetzirah Chloima, and they switch it to Ein Yetzirah. Ein Yetzirah is the language you see sometimes in the drush. It's like when one man says a thing, the other one says Ein Yetzirah. It means he's going to a different mahalach. So, Ein Yetzirah, Hakol Kaminig Hamdina, Faket, the whole Yisrael is that basically the Torah withdrew, and they said, the way it has to work, the only way you're going to have a system that works between the tremendous power of the employer, as the Seichel, the tremendous power of the employee, as the Ben Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, is to do everything Kaminig Hamdina. And that's what he says, Akidei Kach, and then the Rambam is really dramatic, Akidei Kach, that the Minig HaMedina is, you could be paying a guy a thing that nobody gets paid that way. Because Minig HaMedina doesn't mean so much not to stray from what a certain practice. Minig HaMedina means that the whole power was given over to the hands of the Tzibur to create the whole, so if they created the range, so when you divide that range, that's Minig HaMedina. It's like a shuk. It basically is determined by a shuk. When we say Hakol Kaminig Hamedina, we don't mean that nobody may be getting this particular price, but it's still the society got together and created a shuk, and that shuk made this range from 4 to 8. You pay 6. That's the Minig Hamedina. What you're doing is respecting the negotiated the two powers in society between the koyach of the employee who's giving schar and giving people the tafkin in life, like Dugma Shamayla, and is that tremendous power? And then the tremendous power of the Yid and his schus to have his oinus to be a Ben Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, to be able to have koyach to learn Torah and do mitzvahs, and the Torah ceded that power to the Minig HaMedina. Said, okay, we want you to make a minig, we want you to work, come up with the best solution where we can make the best middle ground, to the point where, okay, so that's a shuk, it's created by a shuk, so if we pay a guy an amount that nobody else gets, that's still Minig HaMedina in this sense, because Torah gave you this force to balance those things, and it's the obligation to balance those things, and that's where we want to end up. And so to the point where the Rambam doesn't even hold that by the time the sugi went here, we even threw out Rish Lakish, because no such thing anymore of a fallback position of the Torah. The Torah says, you guys take it over, and call Minig HaMedina.